This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 705, brought to you by Harry's. To redeem Harry's trial set, go to harrys.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. She went away for the holidays, says she's going to LA. But she never got that, she never got that, she never got that. My fanboy pick of the week, episode 705. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host Josh Flanagan, master of the time and conqueror of worlds.
Oh, that's right. I did do that. I forgot, but no, that's totally correct.
We are iFanboy. Are you the master of time? Can you help me out?
Not great, Bob.
I looked in the mirror the other day and I was like, ugh. Everything's starting to sag. Please help me, Master of Time. We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book, called it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, unless they're the same thing. Well, I guess we're still talking about it. We'll skip the list. We're not skipping the listener mail this time because we might have time to do some. So the show will be fun once we get going. It is early in the morning for me, and I'm ramping up vocally. So this is the warm up. You just get to hear it.
That's a new, I'm ramping up vocally.
It'll be fun. Review show. Spoilers. Be careful. There'll be some. Use the show notes. Josh, you had to pick.
I did. I don't want to say I struggled with this, but I read Superman Smashes the Klan.
Which needs an exclamation point.
Yes. Also, as I talk, I opened up the wrong script, so I'm going to fix that because that was last week's thing. And I love Gene Luen Yang, but he does have a very specific voice that sometimes doesn't fit in, sort of with modern superhero comics. And that's not a bad thing, but sometimes it takes a little getting used to, because I think he was originally and primarily known as sort of doing all ages comics, and I would still describe his books as that, but only as
this is from the YA line.
Yeah, no, that's totally all the case. So, as I was reading this book, I had indications of, like, I was like, oh, this is really good. There was a lot of thoughtful things in here, but then there was also a lot of things where, while good and well done, they're not necessarily for me, and they shouldn't be. They're not directed towards me, and I had to get past that a little bit. But as I kept reading and going through it, I was just impressed by what the whole thing was. And there was a lot of very subtle things that I found really impressive. Things that he put in, but they didn't necessarily explain. And then some of them that even paid off later. And I will get more specific as we get going. The other bit that I love the art. The Giri Hiro, who I keep meaning to look up, and because I know I've seen
it. It's two people from Japan. It's an art team.
I know, but
Japan.
They did another book at some point. I think it was a Marvel book. Maybe it was Runaways or something. I'll look at that in a second when we get going. But I've seen them before, or them, or whatever. and I really dug it. I really like that style. No,
the art's terrific.
It reminds you of other art, but it doesn't look like anything else. It's just it's like a cartoon, like but without moving. And when I say cartoon, I don't mean like a cartoonist. I mean like an old cartoon.
Yeah,
that's
perfect for this book. So two things to mention. One, like I said, DC has jumped in with both feet to the YA market, which is really smart because it's one of the only areas selling. So they've been doing a lot of graphic novels, but this is a miniseries that I guess came out in issues. So this is issue 1 of 3.
Okay.
So this is part of their YA line. It's edited by their or executive edited by their young reader editor. So this is definitely a YA book. Not that that's a problem. It's just that's the line it's in. And this is also the Patriot pick.
Yeah.
We should mention.
Yeah, that's true.
So we'll talk about that in a bit later, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. And this book not only smashes the clan, but smashed the voting. It was like it won by nearly 20 votes. It was a blowout. We haven't seen that kind of blowout in a while. So this was the patron pick as well.
And I'd have read it. I mean, like it was.
Oh, for sure. This is on my list.
I read. Yeah. I was very excited. And it's funny because there's obviously you're listening. You know that there's been a lot of Superman talk lately, but it's funny because this is not really related. Like the Jimmy Olsen book is not related to the Bendis Superman books, and the Superman Year One book is not related to this book. And I don't know what to tell you. There's a lot of good Superman books happening right now, and I think Connor and I are just into it. We've told you that. Well, I'm not talking about it anymore.
I want to talk about it a little bit because there's a scene in here that really made me stop and think about it for a minute. And you know, things suck. Right now.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And so I think there's a natural gravitation to Superman for us because he's awesome. And we need more people like him in the world at the moment. There's a scene, the very first scene of this book is Superman stopping, what's this idiot's name? Adam Man.
Yeah.
Who is.
There's a lot of characters like this in the history of comics, and it's hard to remember who's
right.
Who.
So Adam Man is a Nazi superhero or super soldier type who's trying to bust up the Metropolis Dam in 1946. This is a period piece, takes place in the 40s, and Superman shows up and knocks him out and defeats him. And as he's leaving, now it's important to note this is also historically accurate Superman, so he can't fly, he can only jump, and so his mode of transportation, which you have to kind of ignore the physics of, is he runs along the telephone wires. And so as he's leaving the scene, he jumps up on the telephone wires and he makes a little joke to Lois, but then he says, "Jimmy, good to see you." And then he takes off running. And I just thought for a second, that's what makes Superman great, because he is genuinely happy to see Jimmy.
Yeah.
It's just that it's just a throwaway line, but he is genuinely happy to see him and he stops to mention it. And that is what makes Superman great to me, is that little bit of character work.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's not him being fake polite. Mm-hmm. It's not him, you know, social. It's not him observing social norms. He's genuinely happy to see Jimmy, tells him, and then takes off running.
I think overall the thing about Superman is his sincerity.
Yeah,
we are in we are in a crisis of sincerity. I would say, you know, nothing really feels that we're all just trying to do the thing, and you know, Superman's that guy. You can trust that guy, and how much do we want that? You know, and I'm not just talking about the one major obvious thing, but it's in everything.
Can I mention one more thing before we get into the book?
Show.
It's part of the book, but the meat of the book. But another thing I thought about while reading it is that. So the main characters are actually not Superman, but this family, the Lees, who are moving from the Chinatown neighborhood into, I guess, like the suburbs of Metropolis. And because the father has gotten a big job, a scientist, he's the director of a science division of the Metropolis government, or the city government, I guess, whatever the division is. So they're driving in their car, they're all packed up, and they're driving into Metropolis, and we see the skyline, and they mention the building, the Daily Planet building. Why don't we have more buildings with giant statues on top of them?
I mean, all sorts of reasons.
We don't have any. It's just so cool looking. Wouldn't that be awesome if every major city had like a cool statue building?
I mean, it would be good if architecture were more into idolization.
It's a planet. We didn't have to be a person, but it's a Daily Planet building. It's got this giant Jupiter on top. I think it's great.
People aren't into that sort of decoration anymore. But
people are stupid.
It's true, but it's expensive. And
I just want to say that I
you want
I
do you want a big book. Statue or do you want health insurance?
I kind of want the statue.
Yeah, you do.
Health insurance is not going to work anyway, just because we're all terrible.
Yeah.
So might as well have a statue to look at.
All right.
Anyway, let's talk about how great this book was, because I loved it. It was my pick of the week as well.
Okay, good. That's great to hear.
I absolutely loved every bit of this book.
The you got a Chinese family. I want to say Chinese American, but they're actually Chinese.
No, they're Chinese immigrants.
Yeah. At least I don't know if the kids are born. Doesn't matter. The parents are immigrants. The mother doesn't really want to speak English that much. And there's this. I mean, it's difficult for me to not project, but I know that Gene Yang writes a lot about, you know, his experiences growing up, and he talks about it in the back. And so while this isn't necessarily his family, I'm sure this is stuff that he's seen, and there is an element of authenticity to that that's really interesting. So the thing about the mother, there's a lot of things about assimilation in here. I mean, they're very subtle. I don't even know if you would catch them, but there's a bit, you know, where the brother is trying to fit in and the sister is not happy about it. And the dad really wants to fit in, you know, and it's all this sort of internal struggle that's happening a lot. There's that sort of, I don't want to say subtle racism because it's kind of overt, but at least in terms of the 40s, it was subtle racism where, you know, the people are just mistrusting of the new Chinese kids who showed up. And the brother copes by, you know, making jokes about himself a little bit, but also being really good at stuff and being boisterous, you know, and the sister's aware of that. There was one little, I don't even remember what the line was, but she calls it out about how he acts, and they didn't really even specify it. And they didn't pay that off until later when he's in that clubhouse thing and he calls themselves wontons trying to be tough. And I thought that was a really, really nice structure. It's one of those things that I was looking for it because I've read enough Gene Yang books, and I know when they do this stuff that they're, I just really like the subtle way that he did it. We talk about a lot how when people are trying to be political, they're very on the nose, and this wasn't that except when it needed to be. And also they had the setting of 1946 to make that, and being in a Superman comic to be, you know, you get away with it a little more, I think.
Yeah.
That was really nice. The way, then there's a bit. So basically, there's a kid, he gets embarrassed by the brother and he goes home and his uncle or whatever is like, I'm going to make you into a man. And then he makes him join the clan, and they go and they burn a cross on that yard of the Asian family, which is still striking. it's always like, oh God.
And they also try to blow up that. I mean, they throw
a firebomb
at the house, which ends up not working because it bounces off the wall.
And also, just in terms of structure, earlier the daughter makes a really quick joke about who wears red boots to baseball, and that's how she recognizes him later. I thought that was a really nice just bit of technical writing.
But also it turns out he wears them because he's a huge Superman fan, which becomes a problem.
Which was the issue. A great scene from that.
Yeah.
And then the thing I thought was really impressive is that a bunch of black guys walk by and they come to help. And the dad is like, no, we don't need your kind here. And so you've got these cultural sort of problems where everybody's trying not to take on the problems that the other one is having. It's like, well, maybe if I discriminate against them, then the other people will like me more. And it's, God, that stuff's real. And it's really interesting.
Everyone's a little racist.
Yeah.
Avenue Q was the most true song ever written.
Right.
That's why this book was really complex and layered. You know, it's a YA book, and so people might think it's childish, but YA books are not childish. I've read a lot of them, and
I was spending the time trying to think, like, would my 9-year-old like this? And because I don't understand kids today, even my own, compared to like what I would have liked as a 9-year-old, like I would have liked this, because it's pretty. Then the last bit was like, and then those black guys were cops, and so it was just the one guy was. And so it was just one more thing, and he has to back up and apologize. And it just kept doing that. And I really liked all that stuff. And so by the end of it, I was like, I don't know. I know that it wasn't sort of aimed at me, but it was really, really well done. It was a good story, good structure, good script, good art, all those things.
Yeah, I mean, the main thrust of the story is the story of the Lee family who is trying to move into this neighborhood. The son's trying to play baseball. Then the clan shows up, and then the clan kidnaps the son. And I mean, that's the main thrust. Superman's in it in the beginning and the end. Clark's in it throughout the middle, but then
and
Clark's story is also kind of one of assimilation, because we flash back. He gets exposed to kryptonite in the first scene, which he's never seen before, and it makes him feel weird, and he smells weird smells, and his hand he looks at his hand and sees it turn green, but no one else seems to notice it. And we find out later on, and this is another great bit of structure, was that in the 20s, which I fucking love, Superman should always take place in the 30s, 40s.
we need him now, Connor.
He's with Pete Ross reading, you know, pulp books, and you know, Pete loved alien stories, and Clark loves science fiction, Pete loved horror, but they find this creepy alien story, and that's when Clark's powers manifested. So he sees himself as this green-skinned, you know, antennaed alien. And so this is sort of like an anxiety he has, where he has a dream about his Kryptonian parents, but he sees them in that way, not as humanoid like he is. And so he's dealing with this sort of idea of him being a true outsider to Earth and seeing himself, seeing it manifest physically. So there's a lot here about the immigrant story, assimilation problems or anxieties. And it was really good. I thought this was terrific. And as you said, the art is absolutely amazing. I'm bummed the next issue is coming up until December, but I'm looking forward to reading it when it does.
And the scene, you're right. Like that, the Chinese families are called aliens, or they call themselves that a couple of times. And I think it's pretty deftly woven into the Superman story to also make him not just a bystander, but it's like, it explains why he has empathy for them, because he also feels like that, even though he passes. I'm doing air quotes, but that's sort [S2] Sure. [S1] Of the thing. It'd be really easy, I think, to sort of take Superman and go, well, you know, but he's Superman, so what does it matter? It doesn't matter. He has those feelings. And it's not so much about your I'm projecting here. It's not so much about, like, being made to feel scared or anything, but just being made to feel other and different, and, like, you're not part of the thing that you want to be part of. And I think that's the universal part of the Superman experience that is really interesting to me. It was really good. It was bold, and it was, you know, and it was based on a real comic. The way that they structured his little essay in the end was good.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Yes. I thought the essay was great. As it wove between his personal story in the 80s and Superman, the original story this is based on, and then the experience of the black people after the Civil War and Jim Crow, and then experience of Chinese immigrants in San Francisco later on. It was really well done. I mean, he's a great writer. He's won very many awards.
Yeah, no, totally.
Very many prestigious. Didn't he win
the
Genius Award?
Yes, he did. He's an Arthur Grant recipient.
For a reason. He's very, very good. And,
yeah, absolutely. I gotta get him.
He's a comic book writer who has found great mainstream success. Yeah. His books are published generally by non-comics publishers.
And he's one of the guys, like, I don't buy a lot of graphic novels and stuff anymore. I buy his work.
Yeah.
Like I make sure to read it.
Whoever came up with this idea, whether he pitched it or whether the YA team pitched to him, this was a genius move.
Yeah, I agree. It was the whole thing was a delight. Also, my one little, like, I'm really glad that they didn't change the language. They had to say the words.
Oh yeah.
You know,
it gives a power. I mean, it's uncomfortable to read. Part of it. A lot of this is uncomfortable.
Totally.
And we should also mention this is an entirely Asian team on a Superman book, which is probably for the first.
Yep. Yeah.
Or at least first in Western comics. But I read a lot of really fun books this week. But man, when I read this, I was like, okay, no one else came close to this one. This was terrific.
No, and I will say, like, at first, because it's the first thing I read, and I was like, this can't be the pick already. And then I kept going through it, and I was like, oh, that's really good. You know, it wasn't even an act of, like, I'm loving it. And I did love it in the end. But sometimes you're reading it, and you're right away, you're like, I'm loving this. But right away, I was noticing how good it was. So it's just good, and that you have to respect that.
Also, we should mention, in case you haven't read it and you're wondering, it's oversized. I think the whole thing's 80 pages, including 80. The covers and stuff. So, in the essay.
That didn't even bother me.
No, it moved really quickly, but it is very meaty. So, if you're looking for something like that. Once you get to three issues in, it'll be a little graphic novel sized. And it'll be a great little graphic novel, too, when it comes out. But yeah, this is great.
It was difficult to talk about this book without sort of mixing up in my head with Superman Year One Number 3, which also came out.
Well, they're very different.
I know, but like, there's just little bits. I was like, I like Lois in this. And I was like, wait, did I like Lois in this one or the other one? I was just mixing up some of the moments. They are very different.
This is the final issue of the...
Oh, is this the last one?
Yeah.
Interesting. I think I had a little bit of what you talked about last time, whereas I really liked the first bit. and didn't so much love the second bit just because it felt unfinished and weird. And I didn't like the Batman in here. Again, it's not like this is bad. I just was like, that's not doing anything for me. I did like the Wonder Woman.
So this is, post Superman being in the military, post him being King of Atlantis. He's now in Metropolis. He's trying to figure out what to do with his life. And this is sort of your, this is more of your classic Superman Year One story here, where he shows up. So shows up Metropolis. Criminals don't make of him. You know, the papers don't know what to make of him. And so he starts asserting himself. And I like this. I liked issue one. I didn't like issue two so much, but I liked issue three. So I think overall this is successful. It just seemed to me, reading this, it was pretty funny how controversial this was, because at the end it was just sort of innocuous.
Yeah. I mean, if I had anything, if I had an overarching criticism, it's that, like, it didn't really feel like it was a whole thing. It felt like there were bits of it, and I don't think they really coalesced, but the bits were very interesting. You know, they were very thoughtful. You know, it was a view we don't see a lot, is a different version of Superman, but the core of it is the same. You know, he's a guy who wants to do the right thing, but he's got a little bit of, you just hear his more darker thoughts, I guess, is one way to put it. I really love the art. Klaus Janson.
It looks great.
It's not Klaus Janson, is it? Sorry.
No, Danny Mickey.
Danny Mickey. Klaus Janson did the Batman issue over Romita. Danny Mickey's Romita's longtime inker. I really like the first bit where the soldiers are coming after him, and it's hard to remember a time when not everybody knows who Superman is.
Right.
You know, and they're like, well, this'll get him, and he's like, it won't. You know?
Well, I liked him. I mean, I had the same problem with you. His Batman, his take on Batman is not really one I'm all that interested in, but...
That's a very good way to put it.
But I liked him showing up in Metropolis. I like everything before that. I liked him, you know, the criminals not knowing what to make of him. And I loved the scene where he stops the spousal abuse, which is very much reminiscent of the early Superman stories originally in the 30s. Yep. I loved all the stuff in the Daily Planet, even though there was one bizarre scene very early on that almost threw me off, where there's a paper on the wall. It's the first time we see the planet, and it says, like, there's a Trump reference and a mainstream media reference. And I was like, oh God, he hasn't made Daily Planet like a super, like, Fox Newsy place, has he? But
I didn't see that. So
yeah, it was just one of the papers on the wall's background thing. I can't find where it is. But I like the rest of it. I like Perry White. I like Lois. I liked all that stuff.
I didn't like that Lex Luthor was meeting with Joker. I mean, I get it, but this is just we've been talking about that a lot. Like, what's the nature of Lex? What is he? And I don't like him as a super villain necessarily. But it doesn't matter. I really like Wonder Woman in this. That was a really good way to end it. I thought she was pretty rad.
Yeah, so it ends with the Trinity sort of together taking on Lex. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is, you know, a little miniseries and Frank Miller's take on Superman. And it was fine. Overall, I liked it. And I think it shows he's back a little bit. You know, he went through a really rough time, fell health wise, but apparently he's good now. And, you know, as we talked about with the first issue, when it was your pick of the week, I think it shows he's still got it.
Yeah.
He's still got it.
There were bits of prose in here that were beautiful. I was actually trying to look for them and I couldn't, cause there's a lot of the captions are very reminiscent of The Dark Knight Returns in this.
Right.
Just sort of this rambling inner thought that's a little bit it just sort of flows. But there are little turns of phrase and bits of, you know, like wet sand comes up through her lungs. That sort of noir stuff that's really beautiful and is totally Frank Miller. Nobody else does that as well in comics.
And there's action scenes here that are really thrilling. And as you said, the opening scene with the Navy SEALs trying to take him out was great. And, you know, I like this a lot. So
yeah. And it was not, people were prepared to hate it.
Yeah.
Like before it came out, and it just didn't earn any of that.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it was sort of at the end of the day, it's sort of innocuous. Like, I enjoyed it, but like, am I ever going to think about it ever again? Probably not, you know?
No, but it's nice to know, like, oh, Frank Miller still has that voice. He's got...
No, that's what I mean. It's like, it just sort of, like, it reminded me of the controversy around Before Watchmen. Like, it came out, it was fine, and then it didn't have any effect whatsoever on the world. And that's the, that's my point, is that the anger around it was so misplaced.
Yes.
It's like
and it didn't go away. People are still mad about it.
But it's the same thing here. It's like, everyone got really mad about this, but it's like, why? Why? It didn't do anything that was worthy of being mad about, and it's not going to affect anything, and it's going to live in its own little bubble, and it, you know, it's just weird.
It is. It is.
I don't like that kind of reaction to stuff before art comes out, you know, but that's the world we live in.
Yes.
But I like that the art was terrific. I thought the art was really good.
Yeah.
We had two Romita books this week, and they both looked great.
Yep. I don't tend to think of him as like a throwback-y artist, but I realize at this point he kind of is.
He's an older statesman.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think it's the junior on his name. I'm like, oh yeah, he's 65. Or whatever he is. Like, he's not young.
No. So last week we had our original co-host and X-Men fanatic Ron Richards come back to talk about the state of the X-Men. As we closed out the prelude Powers of X, House of X stories, and this week we had the launch of the first book, X-Men, written by Jonathan Hickman, drawn by Lynell Francis Yu. You said you weren't going to read any of them, but you did read this one.
At the last minute, then I kind of forgot. I was like, I felt like I was supposed to. I saw that you'd wrote, and I didn't see it at all. Like, the cover didn't – the cover's not good. And the new
we'll look at that in a second. But the
– yeah.
I just didn't see it,
so I had to grab it at the last second and sort of go through it so I would be prepared to say something on this show.
One thing Ron did, I think, was get me to at least try, I think, all the first issues, because I think his he's a very good salesman. So I'm going to at least look at them, because I did enjoy those books. So here, I think, despite his protestations, this is the main X-Men book. I mean, it's got Hickman, and it's got all the main characters, and this is probably where the main bits are happening.
It certainly felt like an X-Men book. Like, that's my main review. I was like, oh, this is an X-Men book. Like, pretty straight up. They're on a mission. They're rescuing some mutants. There's Cyclops, you know. there's a bunch of other characters I don't know or care about.
Yeah. So now we're meeting sort of the, you know, they've got this Krakoan power, which allows them to build a sanctuary anywhere. So Scott says, well, I wanted somewhere with a view, so they built one on the moon. And so this is the story of the summer house, people living in the summer house, which is like Cyclops and Jean Grey and Wolverine and Vulcan and Havoc and Polaris and Cable and Rachel. All those people are summers except for Wolverine. I don't know what he's doing there, other than his room is next to Cyclops and Jean Grey's room. Actually, yes, it is. Jean's is in the middle. Cyclops is to one side, and Wolverine's is to the other side. So I don't know what that means. But and she has a door that goes to each room, apparently, according to the schematic, which is interesting because none of the other rooms have those doors. So what does that mean?
I don't know.
they're all banging is what it means. Oh. It's Sex Island. I'm sorry, Fuck Island. So I was bummed about Lynell Francis Yu. I like him. But I know you don't like him, but I like him.
I used to, and I still struggle with the fact that I don't think I do anymore.
It just seems an odd choice because, A, he's not going to do more than two or three issues. Mm-hmm. And, B, you had these great artists that you introduced in this – not introduced, but that you put on the other books. You know, I was bummed to see it wasn't Pepe Larraz or the other guy.
I bet they started working on that like years ago.
But it just seemed like, you know, keep it going. Keep this good feeling going. It was a little bit of jarring to see such a different style on the book.
I mean, the thing is, when I said this is just an X-Men issue, like that was the thing. The other ones, at least, even if I wasn't sure I felt about them, they at least felt special. They felt like, oh, they're doing a thing here. This just felt like an issue of the X-Men, which I'm not a fan of. You know, right down to the art. Like, it's not, you know, the guy can draw. The guy's got a big history. But if you just look through it, it's kind of boring looking. Mm-hmm. A lot of heads and torsos. You know, even I'm not getting blown away.
Right.
Like, just, I'm flipping right through the pages, and it's just heads and torsos. You know, there's not there's nothing to really wow me here, and that's what I want. That's what's going to keep
me. It's not a choice.
Yep.
It was not a choice. I liked it. It was fine. I didn't like it as much as the previous miniseries. I'm going to keep reading this main book for at least for a while. You know, this family's so fucked up and weird. So there's got to be something to mine here. I'll be more interested to see who draws it after Lanil Francis Yu can't keep up. Well, because he won't be able to. That's just the way of the world. So, yeah. So did you read Once and Future? Once and Future number 3 came out.
You pushed me to them. I have the issues, and I did not get to them. And so this is your moment. You're going to talk to me. You're going to talk to the listeners. You're going to tell me. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm on it. And I'm going to do that today.
All right. So Once and Future is a 6-issue miniseries from Boom Studios. This is issue 3. I read all 3 issues this week. So it's a little unfair because I got like a big meaty chunk of the story. And so in that sense, I really liked it because the first issue was terrific. The second issue and third issue were good. But altogether, I really liked them a lot. So they would have probably been the second choice behind Superman Smashes the Clan for pick of the week. So the conceit of Once and Future is that first of all, it's written by Kieran Gillen, drawn by Dan Mora. Dan Mora did the Klaus books that we really liked at Boom. Kieran Gillen, it's really interesting this book's at Boom and not at like Image, because this seemed like this would be an Image book for him. But the idea is that in the beginning, a bunch of thinly veiled Brexiters decide to resurrect King Arthur to drive the horde out of Britain, the invaders. You know, that's the myth of King Arthur. He drove out the invaders, and also he is prophesied to return at England's darkest hour. So they decide this is it, and of course it goes very badly for them. And so this is a mix of fantasy, a little bit of horror, but not really fantasy, and English history, and it's a little bit of like, I don't want to say Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but there's a main character. His grandma was an old, you know, fighter of demons and vampires, and he has to get her out of the home to help, you know, save the day, because it doesn't quite go the way these thinly veiled Brexiters plan when they resurrect King Arthur. And so now there's the Knights of the Round Table are unleashed on the world, but they're part skeleton because they haven't quite reformed yet. What these guys didn't realize was the invaders of England that Arthur sent out were the Anglo-Saxons, which is who they are. So he killed all the Brexiters, and it's political, it's fun, it's historical, it's like alternate fantasy history in a way I really like, and the art's terrific.
Okay, I'll read. Dan Mora did that Santa Claus book.
Yep, Klaus.
We haven't talked about Batman in a little while.
We haven't.
And it's weird. 2 John Romita Jr. books, but plus some pages by Mitch Gerrits, including my favorite Bullock panels I've ever seen. Naked, painted.
Whatever he gets into in his own time.
This is not my business. Basically the one that explains everything.
Does it?
I mean, in a way. It's just like, I let Bane think he beat me, and I knew I couldn't go back to Gotham until, you know, everybody thought this was the only way to beat Bane is to make him really think that he beat me. Mm-hmm. There's a bit where all the kids go after other Batman, Thomas
Papa Wayne.
Papa Wayne, who shouldn't be. And I thought, it's funny because when they all went, I go, they can't beat him. And then they couldn't. And I thought that was the right choice. It explains a lot about Gotham Girl. And is it Gotham Boy? Yep. Captain Goth, whatever his name was.
Whatever.
I forgot. Yeah. You know, basically everything that's been going on for a really long time. And there was a bit where he's like, I had a plant. And I was like, Joker's your plant? But it is. And it was Clayface. And if you remember, Clayface was in Detective Comics. He was on their team before. This is all in the guise of, you know, Batman explaining it all to Catwoman. And hopefully we're coming up to the main, you know, sort of confrontation with Bane at the end.
I guess the challenge I have is that, and I listened to your interview with him, and he explained the strange scheduling problems that Batman has had, and the reasons why. And I guess the only problem with that is I totally understand and get it. It just has taken any momentum out of the story out of me, because, you know, we got to a certain point with this story, and then we stopped for the Hawaiian issues, which are tied into here, but really weren't necessary.
I like that they took a nice vacation before taking back the city.
Sure. And so then, like, I had to get back into, wait, where were we again? And, you know, because it's been, like, four issues, and it's just structurally it's been difficult to really stay emotionally tied. And I think it's part of the reason why we haven't really talked about it, because really it's just been like, those are fine issues, but, like, I don't really feel the emotional pull of the story, because I keep having these side issues because the artists need time, and I totally understand why. But just not, you know, it's tough.
I mean, it depends on how you're doing it. If you remember, you know, the first thing Tom did was write novels.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is structured like that. And if you were to read the whole thing in a volume, you're going to feel that way. But I also hear what you're saying. Totally makes sense. And I think there are a lot of bits in here. You know, this is, I don't think this is the best technique, is to confuse everyone for 2 years and then explain it in one issue. That doesn't work. Doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it. And I had mentioned Klaus Janson earlier. Janson inked this, and I love it. I love Janson inks, and I love him on John Romita Jr. This issue is beautiful.
The other negative thing would be they had to shoehorn in the Year of the Villain at the end with the Mitch Garrett's part.
Oh, is that what that was? I was completely confused by that was, so I kind of discounted it. I just,
the symbol in the sky is the symbol of doom.
Whatever. The more you don't know, the more whenever I read something that I'm confused about, I just go, I'm confused, whatever.
You know, I just don't, you know, I don't like the Thomas Wayne bit. And
I know. Let it out.
You know, I don't think he could beat all these sidekicks.
Oh, really? I thought, yeah, well, no. Dramatically, I think he had to, because it's the one part.
Well, sure. Dramatically, of course he does, but... You know, there's seven of them, and you've got Batgirl and Batwoman and Huntress and the two Robins, and you got one of the best hand-to-hand fighters in the world there too. And
that's a good point. And then for some reason, like always, Duke.
Right, and completely useless Duke. And it's just like, it just didn't. You know, I get it. They got to set up the confrontation between him and Batman. I totally understand, but just like, it didn't make sense. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes, and then when it transitions over to the Batman Catwoman miniseries. But I just wish that the momentum wasn't blunted for me.
All right.
That's all.
I mean, one thing I think is, let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
Let's get this behind us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few years ago, actually a fair number of years ago, I got very excited about the idea of going to get myself a shave. Like like you pay a man, you sit in a chair. It's a man.
Yeah.
I would do it if it's a woman, but it's always a man. And they put the lather on you, and they do the straight razor and everything.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a nice experience.
Get the cologne afterwards.
Yeah, I thought I would like it a lot more than I did. Because it was actually, I was like, ow, that blade isn't great. And then afterwards, my skin broke out, and I was like, I thought the whole point of this was so that didn't happen. That's one of the reasons I'm a hairiest guy. I don't have that problem. Doesn't hurt. My skin doesn't break out. All of their products and shave gels and balms and lathers and things like that, they feel good. It's, you know, I don't have somebody do it for me, but if I went back, I'd be like, can you please use this instead?
What?
I should just hand him my Harry's razor, and I would.
That guy would be like, get out of here.
It's a comfortable, no, because he's a professional. He would be like, no, this is good shit. He would know it. But that's the deal. That's why I like the Harry's. I keep coming back to that. Like, wow, I don't get the ingrown hairs where that's happening. My skin doesn't break out. It's, you know, they're sharp. They stay sharp for me for a long time. It's good stuff, and it's not, you know, it's a fair price. It's not all that expensive. It's worth it. Like that was the first reason I ever got it. I was like, oh, that's cheaper than those other ones that I buy. So, and it's worked out. I've been a customer of theirs for years and years, well before this came along. But why would you do it? Well, it's a return to the essentials: quality, durable blades at a fair price, just $2 a blade. They cut out the middlemen. They manufacture their own blades in that big German factory that has been honing blades for a century. And so, which means you get really good, high quality blades at factory direct prices. There's not a supply chain that you're paying the let's say the import tariffs, for example, because it's not going through that country. You know, it's super convenient. They can, you can set it up so that the blade refills are delivered directly to you on your schedule. There's no risk to trying this out. There's none. If you don't like the shave, let them know. They'll give you a full refund. You know, there's that, you can have it any way you want it. That's the deal. Listeners to this show can redeem your Harry's trial set at harrys.com/ifanboy. You're going to get a weighted ergonomic blade handle for a nice firm grip that you can hand over to the man with the old-timey chair and the soap. Or you could just do it yourself. That's actually probably preferable. There's
more economical that way.
It is true. It's a five-blade razor. There is a lubricating strip and trimmer blade on there. You could... you could ask your significant other to do it. Will you shave me? That's a real question of taste or of faith. I mean,
trust.
That's the word.
Yes. Will you put this blade at my throat?
And it's not that you think they're going to kill you. It's just that you don't know that they're going to move the right way. Most people don't shave.
Or they might kill you.
Well, but even by accident, though, that's a true. Right. Well, the thing
it was an accident, officer.
Yeah.
See, I've never shaved someone before.
I was trying to keep it not dark. I was trying to keep it incompetent, which is, you know, it's bad. But
I was keeping it ambiguous.
Five-blade razor, lubricating strip, and the trimmer blade. I'll be honest, the trimmer blade, I have cut myself with it. It is very sharp, and I haven't mastered that yet. Sometimes I get it right, though, and I feel very proud. When I go, oh, this is exactly how you use it, and it works well for that. There's a rich lathering shave gel in this kit. It has aloe in it. We all know that that is the best thing to keep your skin hydrated, and that irritation that we were talking about. Don't get that. And of course, the vaunted travel blade covers to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go so you don't reach your hand into your bag and do exactly what we were just talking about.
We had an email from a listener who said he thought we were kidding about that. Like it was a joke.
I didn't see that, yeah.
It was like a bit. But then he reached into he got Harry's, he reached into the bag, cut his hand, and then went, oh, they're not joking. And so now he has the travel blade cover and uses it. So we're not joking.
He had it. He hadn't used it. Foolishly.
He just thought we were kidding about that, but no.
No. No, you have that bag. You have a bunch of stuff in there.
Right.
That's just, you're saving yourself. They're doing you a service. Like
you're jet lagged. You don't know where you are. Ugh. You know, you're just not on top of your game. You reach into your bag and, you know, you want to feel travel blade cover, not blades.
Harrys.com/ifanboy to start shaving better today. Get on that.
Archie, the Married Life 10th anniversary number 3. If you recall, 10 years ago, Archie did a series called The Married Life in which they...
I do vaguely recall that. And I remember I saw that on the script. Like, oh, right.
It was a fantasy series about what life would be like for Archie if he married Veronica on the one hand and Betty on the other hand. It was a double issue. Like a half the issue was Veronica, half it was Betty. And so we're back with 10 years later to check in. And I wanted to... I've been wanting to talk about this book since it's coming out, but I think one time I wasn't on the show, another time it was like a packed show, and so it didn't make it into the rundown. But I wanted to check in because now that they're into their like 30s and they got kids, life is a little bit tougher for Archie and for Veronica and Betty. This is written by Michael Uslan and drawn by Dan Parent, the classic Archie artist. And so on the one hand, in the Veronica story, her father just died, had a heart attack. His last words were he wished he'd worked more. And so now Veronica is being thrust into the role of CEO of Lodge Industries, even though they were just discussing how they needed more time in the relationship for each other and for their kids, which is now a problem because now she's got to take over this multinational corporation when they want her to be visiting all of these subsidiaries all over the world. And it's going to take her away from the family for like 4 or 5 months. Meanwhile, Moose was the congressman for their area. And he had to resign because of a bullying scandal. One of the kids he used to bully in high school came out and said, "Hey, you used to bully me." And so he had to resign, although it was a setup by his rival Cheryl Blossom, who was running for his seat. But still, he was a bully in high school, and so it's not exactly wrong. He admits to it, and he gets thrown out of he gets to resign from office. So instead of having evil Cheryl Blossom, who is going to give tax breaks to the rich and give corporations free reign, the town has enlisted Betty Cooper to run against Cheryl Blossom. So now that's the big intrigue in Riverdale in that storyline. And then the Archie marries Betty storyline, some random AR exec saw a YouTube clip of Archie playing his guitar and decided that's the next big star. And so, and Archie's been searching for purpose in his life because Betty's a teacher and she's happy, but Archie doesn't really have anything going on. So, and they don't have kids, I don't think. No, Archie and Veronica have kids, but Betty and Archie don't. And so, oh, no, they do have kids. I'm sorry. They both have kids. And the little kids look like Archie. This A&R guy's like, you have to go on the road 52 weeks a year. We'll make you a star. Decide right now. And he's like, And so then this has all been masterminded by Dalton Doyle, who has the ability to see into both worlds. He's some sort of mystical creature and with a really, really bad beard.
You know this is the short section,
yes,
right?
Yes, I'm just saying I really love how crazy this is and how they are able to inject all this marriage and relationship pathos into Archie. And it's just great. I love it.
I love how you have been in this like Archie renaissance of yours for like a for long 10 years, time yeah. now. I know. And I don't care about it, but I appreciate that you like it. So
yeah, it's
much.
Great. And then, you know, that I like that the company, much like with, Afterlife with Archie, the book that just went away and never came back. They're not afraid to torch the sacred cows a little bit. You know, they're not afraid to play with them, which is not something that every company does. But they're not allowed. They're not afraid to introduce these kind of issues into their perfect little Archie world. History of the Marvel Universe number 4 is this is the good stuff. This is the 80s and late 80s, mid to late 80s, early 90s, and this is like the prime period for when we were reading comics.
It's true. And I was definitely starting to recognize stuff. And we were moving through it pretty quick, and then there was some stuff, because they did do the thing when they moved things around a little.
Oh, well, yeah, they're
I was like, oh, that came much later. But that's
they're
fine.
Reorienting the timeline, this. Yeah. But
that's the work of the thing.
You got Secret Wars, and you have what are some of these other storylines I'm trying to see with the Mutant Massacre and the West Coast Avengers forming.
Clone Saga. Carnage, Infinity Gauntlet, all of the different mutant teams. A lot of the West Coast Avengers were in here. God, love Hawkeye's little scooter horse thing.
I just want to. I mean, this has been super fun. I really enjoyed this. And again, as we mentioned every time, if you're like a newer reader and don't know the history, like this is a great resource. But to me, the Javier Rodriguez art and mostly the layouts have been the story of this book. He's doing some fantastic page because he's basically has to tell us page. He's one page to tell a story basically. And so, or to encapsulate an entire storyline with one image. And man, he does some great work. I loved the Clone Saga page so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really good. And also the explanation of it was really good. Did you notice when he drew the Doctor Doom, he drew it like the toy?
Yes. Well, that's how he looked.
I don't know. Did he look like that in that? Because I didn't read it at the time, but I had the toy.
That's how he looked.
God, I love
it. Yeah, and then
yeah, that leg thing.
Yeah.
Did they all have shields?
No, that was the toy thing. Okay. That was basically just
I've never read Secret Wars. Apparently,
taking the molds.
Or it's been a long time.
But I mean, this is good stuff. You have the New Mutants and Captain Marvel dying of cancer, and She-Hulk, coming around, and Nova and Dark Phoenix Saga.
Franklin Richards.
Yeah.
Coming all back around.
I mean, this has been incredibly fun to read. Every time it comes out, I'm happy to read it.
I think the first issue of Analog was a pick of the week.
Or maybe. Or at least you talked about it.
It's been a while. It took a little break. And I got a little, it came back, and I got a little behind. I read 8 and 9 this week. 9 just came out this week. And they're actually, I was kind of like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. But this was really fun. The last one was fun. There is a character in this that's very Preacher Ennis like this old guy who has I don't know his name, has to take a plane from Texas to California, but all the planes are computer run, and so he finds this old guy who has a B-24 Liberator.
Wait, is this the guy who has to ferret information around?
Yeah.
I was reading that, man. Why didn't I keep reading that?
He can't get. Well, it went away for like months and months and months. That character who flew the plane was super fun, and I just had a lot of fun with that bit. It was a good issue. The next issue is the last one, apparently, which I think is right. It should be. But I wanted to check back in.
A lot of these image books are not lasting all that long, which makes sense. But
question about that coming up later.
Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, number 4. I'm curious to see what you think after the last issue, which you very much disliked after loving the first two. Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say very much disliked. It put up some warning. I liked it. I laughed a ton.
This one?
I had a lot of fun. Oh, good, yes,
I love this issue. I was worried.
Yeah, no, I loved it. I loved it. I had a ton of fun reading it. Like, it was one of those, like, I kept laughing and I had headphones on and my wife kept looking at me and I was like, I can't explain it.
So this issue is all about, well, I mean, first of all, Jimmy Olsen really gets to lay out his story to Lois Lane. So that was good. Give us a lot of information. But also, you know, the side humor bit was Jimmy, YouTube star, who, you know, if you recall the first issue, Perry White said, you're making us more money with your YouTube videos than into photography. So focus on the YouTube videos. So he creates a persona for himself. It's not Jimmy Olsen. It's Timmy Olsen.
Timmy.
And it's all the outrageous stunts he pulls, which were funny. I thought they were funny. Putting bees in Dr. Fate's helmet was funny. Oh God, my allergies. You got Olsen.
And also there was like an explanation for why he's acting weird. It's that Gotham, the darkness of Gotham is ruining him.
Right. How many Jokers can we have at this food truck until Batman recognizes it was funny? It was just dumb and funny. And then I love, you know, as we said, the history bits. He really lays out for Lois the history of his family with Luther's family, who just came back with a different name, which was funny, I thought. This was great. And then the Steve Lieber art, as always, is really, really terrific.
Oh, there was some Olympic-level stuff going on in here as far as acting and storytelling. Really just beautiful. And he's the best guy there is right now working at it. So that makes sense. I also really like the scene with Lex.
Yeah, yeah. And then there was they used the original art from the ad to kill Jason Todd in it. That was great. Yep. This was just super funny, which I thought was great.
I repeat, the Batmobile has lost its
We're flying around Starman's staff and like it's just
that was the one. Yep, that got
flew
me
right into
in front of the frying Grayson's food truck. There was a lot. It was fun. I had a lot of fun with it.
The Phantom Swinger. I'm up all night getting freaky. Like it was just little. It was, I don't want to say dumb, but kind of dumb, but also very funny.
It was very
funny. And again, you can only do that with Jimmy Olsen.
Yep.
Those are the books we're going to talk about. As I mentioned, normally this is where we talk about the Patreon pick, but it was also the pick of the week. It's patreon.com/iFanboy. This is where you can go to vote to add a book to the rundown. Any patron can do so. And so we'll use this segment to do our ratings on
ratings.
Superman Smashes the Clan ratings. I'm giving it a 4.5.
Five.
And I'm sticking with it.
Yes.
All right, so there you go. So patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and add a book to the rundown.
It's true.
Yep.
So the patrons get to pick the pick, but they also have the opportunity to get themselves on the list. To receive their own patron superpower from us for the folks who donate $5 a month or higher. We're working through it. We're going. The first guy.
Wait, hold on. Before you do that, I want to mention that I don't know how.
Please.
Last week, we gave out a patron power to a patron who already had four powers. And it was an oversight. We changed the way we were tracking the powers to try to keep from missing people who upgraded. And what happened was, in doing that, we didn't notice that someone was already on the list, and so we accidentally gave someone a fourth power. I hope you take them in the spirit they were given, and you know, sorry, you get a lot of powers. Right?
I think that's not a problem.
No, but I just apologize that you know it was a mistake. If someone made
sense. He's got a Wolverine like power set,
so
a lot of things that don't have anything to do with
anything.
The
one man band.
Okay. So Ian Dunt has the power to come up with the perfect fictional name for whatever purpose they need. So if you were writing, you could come up with a great name, an Aaron Sorkin-like name. If you were telling a joke and you wanted to say Stinky McFunky Pants or something like that, the thing he's going to say is going to be perfect. It's going to be the best one. You can do it on the spot every time. I'm having a hard time naming my main character. Oh, his name is Herod Dunkel. Oh, okay.
That's right. That's fun. Like,
right away. No, total. He can do it. He's perfect at coming up with fake names for whatever need you might have for a fake name.
Mm.
Not just literary purposes. Anytime that there's a reason to have a fake name, Ian's your guy.
Robert Cooper, who – I was going to make a Betty Cooper joke, but I don't have one. Robert Cooper – so you know like a little while ago they were testing out the idea of like bike helmets or motorcycle helmets that inflated airbags around the head to like –
I do.
Robert Cooper can inflate airbags around his whole body. Hmm. Like they just appear. And so like if he fell like off a ladder or was about to be hit by something, he suddenly he's just covered in airbags.
Robert's going to want to watch his anxiety level. Is what I'm thinking. Because, you know, if he's at a party and that makes him angry.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, everyone.
You tap him on the shoulder too quickly.
Uh-huh. So jumpy. Kyle Sens has the ability to make shitty food delicious. So
how?
Have you ever find yourself in you're traveling? This happened once. I was traveling and there was a storm and the plane had to land somewhere else. So instead of going to New York or LA or we landed in nowhere, Kansas. Right. This actually happened. And we were sent over to a microtel where we were to sleep for 2 hours and there was no food anywhere. And it was the middle of the night. And all they had were Hot Pockets.
Okay.
He could make those delicious.
Just by being near them, I don't know why. Like an aura.
I don't know what it is. This Hot Pocket is really hitting the spot. It's perfect. Listen, this always sort of goes around air travel, and I have.
Let me ask you a question. So you're eating this hot pocket, right? And it's delicious. Uh-huh. It's the best hot pocket you've ever had. Mm-hmm. And then Kyle leaves the room. Does the hot pocket stay delicious, or is it suddenly
The food is transformed. The food is transformed into something that you like. You find you're a little kid, and you only want to eat, you know, mac and cheese and chicken fingers. Eat this; it'll be delicious. And there's not even the thing where the kid's like, "I don't want it." Even if they do and they like it, because sometimes they do that, they'll go, "Oh, this is great," and eat the whole thing down. They'll eat whatever food you can make. Whatever food there is completely delicious to the person eating it.
Well, you've got me going on a certain direction here, because Philip Junik can produce any kind of ice cream from his hands.
Wow.
So you want that ice cream from that one place that you went to a long time ago but haven't seen it since? Here you are.
What's your go-to?
You're
going anywhere, you're going to think about getting this thing first.
It's like when I go to a bar, I want to try their old-fashioned. It's like if they can't make an old-fashioned, then the bar is suspect. But like,
what is the point of you?
So in that sense, it's like chocolate and vanilla. Like I want to see what their basic.
Really?
Yeah, I want to see because a really delicious vanilla can be great.
That's true. I love vanilla. I don't like chocolate.
I like chocolate. But my go-to is the vanilla, but usually I get a scoop of each to see how they do it. That's usually my go-to cone is a scoop of chocolate, and a scoop of vanilla, because there's a all your crazy flavors can be great, but like, can they make a delicious chocolate and a delicious vanilla? Because if they can't, then I don't really care about bubblegum or pizza party flavor. You know, like I just, can you make the thing that it's supposed to be first? And then can you?
Pizza party ice cream would be pretty bad.
not if Kyle Sands was around.
It's true. You're not wrong.
So that's that. But then I'll try the other stuff. But like, you know, I want to see how they do. Like there's this really great place that's near a bar I go to. So sometimes we stumble over there and, you know, they have great all kinds of wacky flavors, and they're good. But the first time I went there, I tried their chocolate and vanilla to see how they were.
I'll tell you something. I don't drink very much, as you know. Mm-hmm. I thought about it for a little while, but it's not really. One time, I got a milkshake and then I had a beer afterwards, and that was a bad idea. That was not.
People don't make great decisions after they've had too many old fashions. That's. I'm just saying. It's.
No. It was the ice cream came first. People don't make. I'm a mint chocolate chip man myself.
That's a good one.
I will go for that if but I have very specific like I will not like it if it doesn't. If it's not the good stuff.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and give the $5 or higher level. Get your own superpower on the show. Thank you to Ian, Robert, Kyle, and Philip. Real quick, Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go to become a patron, get us to our next stretch goal, get a superpower, add a book to the rundown, all kinds of fun things there. Have our hangout, which I think is next weekend. Our monthly patron hangout. So if you want to hang out with us for an hour every month as we talk about goofy stuff, we'll probably talk about the Watchmen TV show. You can hang out there. T-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com, ifanboy.com/support. We can help us out via PayPal, and ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can see what books we talk about in the Booksplode, and also a general link. We thank you to all who does that. I flew through that segment because I want to get to the emails.
Okay, cool. But before we do that, I want to introduce something. It doesn't have to take a long time, but I want to delve into Kang a little bit.
Kang Corner.
Yeah, let's do a little Kang Corner here. Real quick. It's not going to take a long time. What do we really know about Kang? Well, do you know who created Kang?
Oh, wow. This is like a whole presentation. No, I don't know. No.
Stan and Jack.
Makes sense.
He first appeared as Ramatut in Fantastic Four number 19 in October 1963. As Kang, he appeared in The Avengers number 8 in September 1964.
You're right. Now I remember reading him there, yes.
So Stan and Jack, right away, that's a mark of quality. You know that. Oh, that costume was designed by Jack. No wonder I love it. Now, do you know that Kang has a lot of different names? How many Kang names can you come up
Kang.
With?
Kang. Ramatut.
It's the best
Ramatut.
One. Yep.
Immortus.
Yes, correct.
And Bob from accounting.
Don't forget Iron Lad.
Oh, right.
And also, apparently, and I don't know about these ones, but there's Victor Timely. Although you may remember Marvel Comics used to be Timely Comics. And the Scarlet Centurion.
I like Victor Timely better.
And then finally, do you know Kang's name? His real name?
No.
Nathaniel Richards.
What?
He's from the 31st century. He was born there. He found Reed Richards' time traveling stuff, and then he went off to go through time and become a
conqueror. Is he Richards?
In the first place he went, maybe.
Ooh, that's exciting. I like that.
That's it. Right?
That's great.
Okay, let's one little more bit. We'll come back. We'll do more Kang talk. There's going to be a book explode in the future. I don't see how there isn't. We're going to have to delve into this. But here are his abilities. Uh-huh. He's an expert historical scholar.
Well,
that's the real thing.
Yeah.
He was a history buff. He's time travel, obviously. He's a genius level intellect. Mm-hmm. He's a skilled tactician and hand-to-hand combatant.
Obviously.
He has, this is unexplained, a resistance to radiation, which you would have to doing that.
Oh, yeah.
He has access to advanced technology, being from the 31st century, which includes a highly advanced battle armor that gives him enhanced strength, energy, hologram, and force field protect projection. This is my favorite, 30-day supply of air and food in the suit.
In the suit.
The ability to control other forms of technology. And finally, as Ramatut, he had a will-sapping ray gun.
He also has a healthy ego.
That's a bit of Kang. That's a little bit of Kang in the Kang corner. Let's get on to some of these questions and then wrap this bad boy up.
We're doing Andrew? Andrew's in California. Over the last few years, I have dropped more and more Image books from my pull list. Years ago, I was super excited for virtually all new Image books, particularly when so many Marvel and DC creators flooded Image with new comics a few years ago. My question is, what do you think of Image's current offerings as a whole, and do you think there's a new generation or grouping of talent Image has not tapped into whom could create the new Image boom? Thanks.
Who could recreate the new image boom? Don't get away from my, this is important. I thought of this question a few weeks ago, but didn't really think about it much until he wrote this email. While that's not preferable, right, I do appreciate your honesty.
It is interesting. The Image boom has petered out. I don't read a lot of Image books, and a few years ago we were reading tons of Image books.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like what Image books really excite me when they come out, and it's like down to like Criminal.
I mean, there were a bunch of good ones that don't seem to exist anymore, and I think that I've thought about this a lot because I don't really know the answer, and I don't know what happened other than a lot of those big name folks who came over. They made their bones. I, you know, we personally know some people made a lot of money on books that you would be surprised about.
Well, like
that was a thing.
Saga's on hiatus, but I stopped reading that in issues.
But like Southern Bastards, all those Jason Aaron books have gone away.
Southern Bastards, because Jason's now the man at Marvel. Co-writing the one with
Sea of Stars,
but that's not really. It doesn't really light you on fire like his other ones did. He never finished The Goddamned with R.M. Guerra.
And then the other thing would be that, like, you know, it seems to coincide a little bit with when everybody started double shipping.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like the big publishers were like, well, let's give more work, and that way they won't have time to do that thing. I don't know that that's the case. You know, and a lot of the guys who started back then who did long runs are wrapping them up now. You know, the TV shows and movies already sort of happened and came and gone. And
Remender had a ton of books. He just wrapped up Black Science. Deadly Class is still coming out. I don't know. I stopped reading Low. I don't know what happened to Low. That book he was writing with Bengal, the book about the girl with the the trucks. Car. What happened to that book?
I don't know.
I mean, he did get hired to showrun a TV show, so that's what happened to that book.
So, I mean, one thing I think to a certain, I'm sort of speculating, and I know some things that I don't know that I'm allowed to talk about. So I know that in one way, Robert Kirkman and The Walking Dead were very much bankrolling a lot of Image.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
When that was there, they were pretty flush with cash and could take a lot more risks. And I don't think that that's the case anymore. Two, you know, what I don't know is why the audience dried up for a lot of that stuff. Where if, you know, I'm trying to think of who, you know, if Tom King were to go start an Image series over there, you know, 5 years ago, could have bought him a house. And now I don't know if it would. And that used to be the case. That used to be the case that you'd go there. And even if you were well known at Marvel, you'd sell 5,000 books at Image and that would be it. And then for a little while, there was, you know, this boom and it went away. It happened to coincide somewhat with when our friend Ron worked there. I don't know.
I'm just thinking about all the books back then. Like Lazarus is now a quarterly book.
The Old Guard disappeared.
Brubaker was only doing Criminal. You know, he was doing Velvet back then, and he was doing some other books. Because he's also doing a TV show. He's on a couple of TV shows. Like a lot of these guys got TV work. And I'm thinking about the books I read there now, and they're just not books that light the industry on fire. Like Middle West is a solid book, but it's not like, you know, same thing with Farmhand.
It's a good book.
Farmhand isn't true in terms of industry influence or impact.
So here's what I think. I think that this is like armchair. It's not repeatable because you had this perfect storm of stay with me on the timeline. Comics goes bankrupt. The industry collapse. Early 2000s coming out of it. They start and they build up completely anew. There's your Bendis, your Warren Ellis, Mark Miller. I know. But comics weren't doing well in general. Stores were going out of business all over the place. They call it the boom. It's industry-wide. They had to build up a whole thing again. Those people who made names and then the people who followed them, the generation, the next class, they got a little like bored of the superhero stuff. And then they all went over there. And for some reason, like the readers from that generation also seemed to follow them for that. Now all those guys did all their stuff and there's no other people to cover. There's no new writing superstar guys.
No, that's the other side of this is he asks, is there a new generation? The fact is there isn't because there are obviously people like Donny Cates and Matthew Rosenberg and there are new writers, but they're still underneath Bendis and Aaron and
Miller. There's no new Miller. Yeah. I don't think Jason Aaron quite is at the, you know, he's not at the Bendis level.
He is the current Bendis at Marvel.
I understand that, but he's not Bendis.
Well, no one is.
And I say that, right. And I say that with all like complete respect, you know, like there's not a superstar that can sort of pull people in. There's not a Jim Lee.
Brian Vaughn. Really, I mean, other than Brian Vaughn would have been the guy, but he didn't pull people into Image. They all just left of their own accord because they wanted to write their own creations.
I mean an audience. I mean sales. Oh, yeah,
that's
guys who can bring in all their sales. You know, like there's, you know Vaughn was sort of the runner, the leader of that one. I think by doing Saga, that sort of, you know, and then Fraction was there and Brubaker, like all those dudes. I just don't understand where all that audience went. That's weird that they disappeared because the people didn't run out of stories.
But again, is it the audience that's gone or is it the people who did the boom succeeded in telling their stories and then getting lucrative TV work?
I know, but then, okay, well, I mean, it's a combination of those two. I doubt that. I don't know. It's hard to self-publish, but there's no people to replace those people who are able to bring in an audience, but also don't know that audience comes back. It's very weird. I don't understand it fully.
I don't know if the audience is gone. I think if all those guys were still doing their Image books, people would be buying them. They just stopped doing their books.
Maybe.
They told their stories or they launched padded to other work.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know. This is all speculation. I just know that for me, you know, there was a, was it 3 years ago or whatever, 4 years ago, I was probably reading mostly Image books, or at least they were mostly the ones I was excited to read. And they were the ones that were always pick of the week. There was that time, remember, it was all Image number ones were coming out, and they were always pick of the week, and people were getting mad about that, just as they were getting mad about the Bendis stuff now. And that was a different time. It's not happening right now.
Yeah, true. If you want to write in, you can send it to contact@ifanboy.com. That's a really good question. Connor, tell them about the podcast and things that are coming along, and then we'll wrap this up.
So Booksplode Sleeper Book 1 was our last Booksplode, where Josh and I talked about the first volume of Sleeper. Had a great time doing that. We have our next Booksplode, which will be coming out in November, and which we'll announce as we get closer. Also, if you go back in the feed, you can find Joker. Josh and Mike Romo and I review Joker. You can find that discussion there, as well as the newly released Talksplode, where Josh interviewed Kyle Starks, one of our favorite new writers.
He's a guy who's making his way along without doing that other stuff, and he's very happy about it.
So you can find all those shows on our feed, and coming up this month is Wonder Woman Bloodline, the Animated Brain Trust review, I think last week of October, but honestly we haven't talked about the scheduling yet, so I don't want to promise it in case the people are busy and can't do the show, but it'll be sometime soon.
Get over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our recent podcasts, all those ones you just talked about. You can find this one. You can comment on the show. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following @ifanboy on Twitter. And you could also follow @ifanboycomics on Instagram. We put up stuff there, Best of the Week in Panels. We tell you what the picks and things are. You can follow us individually, J.A. Flanagan and C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram. And I'm just going to go through. If you like this show, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. You can tell people about it. You can leave a review anywhere you'd like. I don't know what other... My other podcast apps don't seem to have a review function or a rating. So it's the Apple one. That's just how it works. But talking about it on social media, linking all that stuff, telling people in your comic shop or your mailman, leave him a note. Are you bored on your route? You could listen to this. And he'd be like, I don't like comics. And he'd be like, they're pretty funny. And he'd be like, well, it was okay, but I honestly, I don't know who's Kang. So maybe that's not the best way, but try it. You know, it can't hurt. Better yet, you know, tell people directly, just all that stuff. And we thank everyone who does that. That's a really been a big thing for us throughout the years. The same way that when I talked to Kyle Starks, he said, boy, people from your show really have told me that they found our books because we were talking about them there. Same thing. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate those of you who tell creators that, because that helps me get them on the show. It's done it many times. Big folks. And so we appreciate that. That's all. I'm Josh.
I'm Connor.
Who's not used to going last, but I made him do it.
That's true.
It's weird, really right? My baby away. It took her away. Away from me. The KKK took my baby away. It took my girl. It took my baby away. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.